Blog Talk Radio.
Mi chiamo Apura Kanu, Apurai Kaitnut, Neye Eguada, Medinde Ujirafo, Kwesi, Ranehmputa, Akan, Akamumain Amaruka, Etifi Mu, Ujirafo, Ujiramain Mu. Greetings to all Apura Kani, Apurai Kaitnut, people meaning Africans, black people. Today is Eguade Marketplace Day. My name is Ujirafo, Kwesi, Ranehmputa, Akan. Ojirafo of the Akwamu Nation in North America, within Ojiraba, the purified nation, Apurakani, Apurakani people in the Western Hemisphere. Did I say we thank you once again for tuning into the broadcast. We're having an earlier broadcast tonight because of the scheduling change. We're opening up the chat room. If you have any questions or comments and you'd like to interact in the chat room, you must log in as a user in order to interact. If you have any questions or comments on the phone line, simply hit the number 1 so that we can see that your hand is raised. For those who are new to the broadcasts, we have 4 broadcasts typically on a weekly basis. We have Akanfo Nana Som, Ancient Authentic Akan, Ancestry Religion on Joda on Monday nights, where we deal specifically with the Akan expression of Nana Som, of Ancestry Religion, first and foremost, because we are Akan, secondly, because of the misinformation being propagated regarding Akan cosmology, culture, ritual practice, and so forth, not only from individuals in the Western Hemisphere, but also from those individuals on the continent of Afuraka, Afuraikai, who have been infected with white pseudo-religion, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, and so forth, fictional cartoon characters of those fake religions, as well as just white culture in general, and thus their presentation of ancestral religious practice has been infected as well. So we deal with ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion on Joda Monday nights. This deals with our ancestral origins in ancient Kanat, which is a title of Nubia, the Khan, land, first land, foremost land. Our people originated there 2,000 years ago after the fall of Kemet. In northern Kanat, some of our people migrated west to reestablish the Kanat or Ghana Empire in the western part of the continent. Hundreds of years subsequent to that, some of our people migrated further south in the region of contemporary Ghana and Ivory Coast and reestablished our Kana civilization in the Savannah and Forest Belt regions. Centuries later, some of our people were taken from those regions and forced into North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe during the Musu Okeke, the Great Perversity, the enslavement era. And this is how we ended up in the West. However, we maintained our ancestral religious traditions. Thus, Akan ancestral religion in Suriname, South America, is called Winti, from the Akan term Winti. In Jamaica, Akan ancestral religion is called Obia, from the Akan term Obai. In North America, in the United States, Akan ancestral religion is called Hoodoo, from the Akan term Undu, meaning medicine from roots, trees, plant life. It also means to become heavy with the spirit through spirit possession, spirit communication. We find these same terms in the language of ancient Kanat and Kemet, Undu in the Medutu, the hieroglyphs, meaning medicine from roots, trees, plant life. It also means to become heavy with the spirit. It also is the offerings being given on the shrines for the deities and ancestral spirits. And we also, of course, have the title Undu, being the title of the land itself of Nubia, the Undu land, and the people being called the Undu people, as well as deities being called the Undunu spirits and so forth. So we have all that information in our book, Hoodoo People. We'll go into detail about that. This is what we deal with on Joda on Monday nights. On Benada, Abinada Tuesday nights, we have Ojida, which means purification. We deal with ancestral religion in general, not just the Akan expression, but wherever Afurakani, Afurakani people, African black people exist in the world, we practice our ancestral religion, and we deal with how ancestral religion impacts every aspect of our lives. In essence, ancestral religion is defined as the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance. That means through ritual, we incorporate those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to incorporate in order to harmonize our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order. And through ritual, we reject those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to reject in order to reestablish balance and realign ourselves with divine order. So the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance, these are the expansive and contractive poles of ancestral religion. We state that Ojida, purification operationalizes Nanason. Purification operationalizes our practice of ritually incorporating law and ritually restoring balance so that we can align every thought, intention, and action with divine order every moment of every day. When we make legitimate mistakes, then we engage the ritual process so that we can realign ourselves spiritually, incorporate law, restore balance, so that we can get back on track with executing our function in creation and aligning every thought, intention, and action with divine order every moment of every day. So this is how ancestral religion impacts every aspect of our lives. So that's what we deal with on the Ojida broadcast, the purification of concepts, purification of cosmology, purification of ritual practice and understanding of that text from ancient Kanet and Kemet, as well as the oratory, ritual text and so forth that has been passed down through orally, intergenerationally, transcarnationally, and so forth. On Yauda Thursday nights, also called Yada Abada, we have Amayin Sim Affairs of the Nation, where we deal with issues that confront us as an Omayin, specifically as Ojida Mayin, the purified Ojida Omayin Nation, Mayin in the land of the west, the setting sun. We deal with Amaniye Nationism, which is a purification of nationalism. It is an approach to nation-building restoration rooted in our ancestral religious values, rooted in a proper definition of what a nation is. A nation or an Omayin is a living, breathing entity governed by specific forces in nature, and we are cells within that organism. Because we have been forced into the Western Hemisphere, at some point we have been directed by our ancestresses and ancestors to coalesce in a specific region of the West, blend ancestral blood circles, interface with the unique expression of the Earth Mother divinities in this region of their body in the West, interface with the unique expression of the forces in nature in this region of the Western Hemisphere, interface with plant life, animal life, and mineral life for food as well as medicine, as well as the spirit totems of plant life, animal life, and mineral life as they manifest in this region of the Western Hemisphere. And therefore, we, through that confluence of events, we have forged a locative identity, a unique expression of Afurakani, Afurakani culture, ancestral religious practice, and so forth, based on our interfacing with this region of the Earth Mother's body and so forth. So we forge a locative identity. We have a unique expression of culture and a unique approach to solving our issues that confront us as an Omayin, as a nation, and specifically as Ojida Mayin, the purified nation, Afurakani, Afurakani people in the Western Hemisphere. So Amayin Sim Affairs of the Nation, that broadcast addresses that. Tonight is Eguada Marketplace Day. We deal with businesses, organizations, and institutions, Afurakani, Afurakani businesses, organizations, and institutions that are serving the Afurakani, Afurakani community, the African Black community in a positive capacity, those who maintain their ancestral religious values in the context of that service to the community. So we showcase different businesses, organizations, and institutions, and you'll see our broadcast where we interview those business owners and so forth, organization heads and institution founders and so forth. But we also deal with the philosophical foundation of economic development rooted in our ancestral religious values, a key component of Amayin Sesiu, or nation-building restoration. So we have a holistic approach to economic development. We have published our Okom economic development model, which deals with that. Of course, that's a free download from the website. So this is what we deal with on Egwa Marketplace Day. So tonight we have a special broadcast, a shorter broadcast, but we wanted to go over this article that we published earlier today because it's very key, is very important. Before we get to that, of course, we're having this weekend coming up, this Memorial Day weekend, March 26th, March 27th, our Ka'et, Soul of Hoodoo and Voodoo Training, Cultural and Ritual Retreat. It's going to be in New Orleans, in Tremé, New Orleans. Myself and Voodoo Queen Kalinda Laveau will be conducting this retreat. We will have our sessions on Patas Asatem and Oberima Afurakani Manhood and Obatine Afurakani Womanhood, these workshops and trainings, tours and so forth with regard to the authentic voodoo tradition, ancestral ritual, and so forth. So, of course, that is coming up. We've been talking about that for a couple of number of months now. That is this weekend. As we said in a previous broadcast last night, because of a couple of last-minute cancellations, we do have a couple of spaces left. So if you still wanted to come to that retreat, you can go to the COC Hyatt page on our website to register. And you'll see, of course, it's 50% off for married couples. And we also have that payment plan option. So you can still go to the site. We have a couple of spaces left that recently opened up over the past 10 days or so. So you can check that out. But we want to get into this article that we published earlier today. And we published it on Facebook, but we also published it on our OG.sim blog on WordPress, so you can see that. And we're going to put the link in the chat room right quick for the OG.sim blog, so you can see that as well. Give me 1 second as we're going through that process. All right. So, and just hold on 1 second. We just want to, we have one more piece. For those who came in a little bit later, if you have any questions or comments and you'd like to interact in the chat room, you must log in as a user. If you don't have a username, you can sign in for one quickly in BlogTalk. If you have any questions or comments on the phone line, simply hit the number one so we can see that your hand is raised. But tonight's broadcast is going to be a shorter broadcast. So the name of this particular article is called Ocom, the Remedy for PBBW, Praising Black and Buying White. And you'll see the image of the divinity Nebethet, the Abosom, the goddess Nebethet, here in this image. You also see a couple of other images that we want to deal with, but that first image is Nebethet, and this is who we start off with. Now, the Abosom, the goddess Nebethet, as she's called in ancient Kemet, shown in this image. She's also called Wura Hekau in the language of ancient Kemet. Wura Hekau, but this title of Nebethet in ancient Kemet, Urat or Wurat Hekau, that is vocalized as Awura Akua in Akan. That is a title of Akua in Akan, Awura Akua, that comes from Awura Hekau in ancient Kemet. That is the same divinity. So we show in our publication dealing with this divinity, Akua, that she is the same deity and has the same title in Akan culture that she has in ancient Kemet. Now, one of the praise names of Akua, this female divinity, Akua in the Akan language, is Kukua. And this title, this praise name of Akua, this Kukua title in the Akan language, literally means a small earthen vessel. And that, of course, is very key because this is the same divinity. That small earthen vessel, Kukua, which is her title, is the distinguishing characteristic in the iconography of ancient Kemet and Kanit regarding Nebethet. She's the only one, that female divinity, who has the vessel on her head that distinguishes her unique headdress. When you see a female divinity, you may see a female divinity with cow horns and a disc, or you see with a throne, which is offset. But when you see Nebethet, you see that she has the vessel on her head that distinguishes her from other female divinities in the iconography. That vessel that she has, that's why one of her praise names in Akan is Kukua, which means a small earthen vessel. Nebethet is the divine courieress. She takes the ritual offerings we have for the Abosom and Nananom and Samafo, the deities and the spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors of our blood circles. We give ritual offerings at the shrines and so forth. Nebethet is the divine courieress. She takes those ritual offerings and the energetic output coming from those ritual offerings and carries them in her sacred vessel to the spirit realm. The ritual offering provokes the Tumi, the divine power of the Yabosom and Nananom and Samah for the deities and ancestral spirits. Once that energy or that divine power, that Tumi, is provoked through ritual offering, is dispensed to our spirit so that we can overcome imbalances in life. So when we talk about ritual provocation, invocation through ritual offering, ritual song, ritual dance, ritual prayer, and so forth, we're talking about utilizing something that is given, projecting that energy from that ritual offering, the energy that is projected from that ritual offering provokes the energy of the forces in nature that we are communicating with and the ancestresses and ancestors we're communicating with, and then their response is to dispense their energy to us and bathe us with their energy so that we can be empowered, revivified, and so forth, and then we can move forward and overcome any imbalances in life, heal ourselves, become properly informed, and so forth. In a sense, it's akin to a child that provokes the energy of the mother. If a child is being breastfed, the mother knows that the child needs nourishment. She knows that she has the nourishment. The child instinctively at some point is going to be ready for the nourishment, so the child begins to cry. That is an invocation. And then the child pulls on the mother's breast and provokes that response, and the response is a release of milk, which gets into the child and nourishes the child, immunizes the child, empowers the child, and so forth. That is a ritual provocation on the physical level. When we engage in ritual song or ritual prayer, we release those sound vibrations, that energy, just like sound. When you sing to a certain pitch, those sound vibrations can break a glass. When you project ritual sound vibrations through ritual chant, ritual song, and so forth, ritual prayer, those sound vibrations provoke the energy of the Abosom, the Nananom and Samanfo, the deities and ancestral spirits you're communicating with, and the response is them releasing or transmitting energy to us that empowers us, revivifies us, clears up minor or our temporary imbalance within our spirit bodies and so forth, so we can be empowered and move forward, overcome imbalances in life and so forth. So that's the release of Tumi. So even when we're using ritual offerings, certain foods or plant life, animal life, mineral life are categorized according to the forces in nature. So you have certain forces in nature, whether it's water, you know, the oceans, the rivers, and so forth, or you have fire, the sun, or the core of the earth, you have the earth itself, black earth, red earth, you have the atmosphere, different aspects of creation, the spiritual forces that animate these different aspects of creation. They carry the energy complex of these different features of creation. So you have fiery deities, you have water divinities, you have earth divinities, you have divinities of the air, atmosphere, and so forth, thunder, lightning, black substance of space, and various different aspects of creation. You have plant life, animal life, and mineral life, who are categorized according to these different aspects of creation and the energy output of these different aspects. You have fiery animals, you have watery animals, you have animals that are more airy and so forth. You also have plant life that's categorized in the same fashion, mineral life that's categorized in the same fashion, and us. Some of our people have are children of a fiery divinity. A fiery deity governs our head, so we carry that energy. Some of us are children of a water divinity, so we carry that energy and so forth. We are categorized as well. This is why we can give offerings, plant life, animal life, mineral life, in the form of ritual offerings based on who we are communicating with, that plant life that's associated with that particular divinity, that mineral life or animal life associated with that particular divinity is like a battery that carries the potency of that particular force of nature's energy. And when we release it and give it ritually, we put the food on the shrine or the mineral life on the shrine or the animal life on the shrine and so forth, it radiates the energy of the divinity at a specific frequency. And then Nebethet takes her earthen vessel and she carries the spiritual aspect of that offering to the divinities to provoke their energy. And once their energy is provoked, is released and transmitted to us, dispensed to us, we're bathed by that energy, and we can utilize what has been dispensed to us to overcome some temporary imbalance to empower ourselves, to heal ourselves, to inform ourselves, give us insight into certain issues or things that we didn't have insight within before, to connect and engage the process of nation building, to defend ourselves in various different things. So this is what Nebuchadnezzar is doing. Just like you have, you can place food on the shrine, but then when the smoke rises up from the food, that's ethereal, it rises up, that aroma can be floating through the room or even outside of the room, outside into, you know, outside the building and so forth, and people can smell that and begin to salivate. They're not touching the food, they're outside, but the aroma is floating through and it hits their nostrils and it causes a physiological change within them. In the same fashion, you have the physical offerings that are placed on a shrine, but once provoked, the energies that is contained within that physical offering is provoked ritually, then that energy is released, and Nebuchadnezzar takes that and carries those energy units to the Abosom that they're directed towards, it provokes their energy, or to the Nananoman Samapho, who is directed towards, it provokes their energy, and it's dispensed to us in a feedback system. So this is what we're talking about when we talk about her carrying that energy. We go into a little bit more detail on Akua in our article on Akua, which is outside of this article, but it's directly related. She's the divine courieress, the protectress, the governess of ritual, and nurse mother. She governs the divine renal system, the fluid balancing and excretory structure of creation, the great divine body of the supreme being, Amenet and Amen, and thus the renal system within the Afurakani Afurakaitni African body. The renal system is the kidneys, the fluid, and, you know, kidneys and ureter and bladder and so forth, the fluid system, fluid balancing system, and excretory system within the body. Akua also governs the excretory function of lactation, nursing, and the rainwaters, lactation of Asase Apua, the earth mother. She nourishes the living and protects the spirits who transition to Asimando, the ancestral realm. So just like she has that vessel on her head that carries the offerings, and we show that in the Medutu, and we go into some detail about that in the article, and we show that the title Akua in Kemet also means the recess in a courtyard, and you look at her headdress and that structure, the head structure is also the Akua structure and so forth. We go into some detail about that and some of the linguistic information for that vessel on her head that carries the ritual offerings. And once those ritual offerings are taken to the divinities and their energy is provoked so we can be fed from them inside the body, that vessel that she carries inside the body is the renal system. And there are two of those vessels inside the body, which are the kidneys. Those are the vessels that deal with purification, deal with the electrolyte balance and mineral balance in the body and so forth, and fluid balance in the body. So we go into some details showing that physiologically, that vessel that she wears on her head in the physical sense is inside the body and so forth. In nature, you see the clouds that form, that release that lactation or that, you know, rainwater and so forth, and the dew eventually manifests on earth that nourishes and protects and heals and rejuvenates and so forth. So we go into detail about that in the article, specifically on Akua. As Nebuchadnezzar, she is the wife of Set. In the Akan tradition, she's called Akua. She's the wife of Awuku Anansi in Akan. In the Yoruba tradition, she is Agberu, the wife of Eshu, and Agberu means the load bearer in the Yoruba language. And the load bearer, of course, is the vessel she carries on her head. So she's called the load bearer, Agberu, the wife of Eshu. In the Yoruba tradition, she's called Koni Koni, the wife of Legba in Vodun. So the same marriage, Set and Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar is the female divinity, Set is the male divinity. He's the trickster, he's the messenger in ancient Kemet, sacred colors, red and black and so forth, divine messenger, and she's the wife of Set, he's the husband of her. In the Akan tradition, Awuku or Kweku Anansi is the trickster, the messenger, sacred colors, red and black and so forth. His wife is Akua. In the Yoruba tradition, Eshu is the trickster, the messenger and so forth, sacred colors, red and black, operating through the planet Mercury and so forth. His wife is Agberu, the load bearer. In Vodun, Legba, the trickster, the messenger, and so forth, and the wife is Koni Koni. So we have the same marriage between these two divinities in these various traditions with the same attributes. So we say, while Set Eshu Awukwananti Legba is the divine messenger carrying our ritual prayers and invocations to the Abosom and Nananom Unsamampo Nebethet, and he operates, by the way, through the nervous system, the peripheral nervous system, which carries the messages, the world wide web in the body that carries the messages of the quote unquote communications of prayers to every cell in the body. Nebethet Agberu Akua Koni Koni is the divine courieress carrying our ritual offerings. And of course, when you know the kidneys are secreting, you know, fluids and so forth and balancing minerals and electrolyte balance and so forth in the body, she's engaged in that process, regulating, having a regulatory function within the body, just like the nervous system has its own regulatory function in the body. Now, because she carries those ritual offerings, this is why one of the definitions of the term Kua in Akan is fertility, in reference to the land. The fertility of the land brings forth produce in abundance that we use to nourish ourselves, empower ourselves, and heal ourselves. And within the body, of course, the mineral balance in the body is key to our capacity to function, to be nourished, rejuvenated, operate, and so forth. If your kidneys are not working properly, in a very negative scenario, you end up on dialysis and so forth. So, but it's key to fertility, it's key to abundance, it's key to nourishment, it's key to revivification and so forth in the physical world and also within our bodies and also within our spirits. This is also directly related to the Egua, which in Akan means marketplace. And of course, today is Egua Da, Marketplace Day. It is Awuku Da or Akua Da, which is Wednesday, the day of Akua. She operates as the feminine force animating the planet Aku or Mercury, where Kwekwa Nansi is the male force animating Aku or Mercury. And this is Awuku Da or Akua Da, Wednesday, day of that particular planet, and the day of Awuku and Akua. But it's also, therefore, the reason why we have Egua or Marketplace Day, because we're dealing with the marketplace. This is the place where produce is taken and exchanged so that all can benefit from the produce of the community. So, because of the nature, and so here, first we want to establish that philosophical foundation for who this divinity is. And what her function in creation is. But then we want to get into this notion because, of course, the title is Okom, the Remedy for PBW, Praising Black while and Buying White. Now, you know who Akua is, Nebethet is, what her function is. Because of the nature of social media and deeply seated conditioning, we daily see individuals in the cultural community and specifically in the cultural community, giving praise to black businesses. Notice that communication, Awuku, Anansi, Kwekwanansi, Alegba, and so forth, giving praise to black businesses, organizations, and institutions. People who are involved in culture and so forth, they get online, they praise black businesses, praise black organizations, praise institutions. They share links, they have poetic statements are made about the value of these businesses, black businesses, and more. However, the businesses are chronically undersupported, and black business owners, especially within the cultural community, we're empowering people through the kind of information that helps to heal people through natural medicine or heal people psychologically, mentally, emotionally, and so forth. They're dealing with nation building, education, and so forth, these various things that deal with culture. The whites and offspring try to make it appear that culture is irrelevant and unimportant, and all you need to do is focus on finances. But in reality, everything is based on culture. Your way of life, how you operate is based on culture. What food do you eat in the morning? What kind of clothes do you put on? How do you operate? How do you raise your children? How do you engage with the opposite sex? Everything is based on your way of life, of your culture. If you're imitating the way of life or culture of our enemies, then we're self-destructive. The reason we smoke and drink, engage in promiscuity, because we're self-destructive, worshiping a white male named Jesus, hating ourselves and embracing our enemies because we're following their culture. So that while they make us foolishly believe that culture is unimportant, they're constantly brainwashing us with their culture, promoting bisexuality, homosexuality, everything else, interracialism and all of that nonsense. They're constantly promoting their culture so they can control our minds. If you follow someone else's way of life, then they're controlling your mind, they're controlling your behavior. This is why we're engaged in a self-destructive fashion on a regular basis. This is why we're under-supporting our businesses. It leads back to culture. That's why we have our Okom economic development model. First, we establish the philosophical foundation for Okom. So we have to reestablish ourselves, reground ourselves in our own culture, our way of life that's productive instead of self-destructive, and then we can deal with economics from a grounded perspective. If we try to deal with economic development from a non-cultural perspective, that is foolish, that is naive, we fall into the trap of the whites and their offspring. So we have people who give praise to black businesses, organizations, and institutions, share links or poetic statements made about the value of these businesses and more. However, the businesses are chronically undersupported, as is proven day in and day out. Conversely, white businesses are shamed or exposed by the same individuals, yet those white businesses are automatically supported by the same individuals on a daily basis. White businesses can definitively say that they are patronized by black customers every single day, multiple times per day, although they despise us. If you talk to black business owners, specifically dealing in the cultural community, if they're dealing with education, drug prevention, selling products that we need on a regular basis, whether it's shea butter or soap or you know, whatever it is, hair care products or clothing, or have educational institutions, daycares or schools or anything that we need, or they're teaching holistic health so we won't have to go to these doctors and get poisoned, and, you know, or dealing with mental health and so forth, so we can engage in ritual practice, ancestral religion, so we don't go to these psychiatrists and get medications that destroy our bodies. People are engaged in cultural-based businesses that are actually improving the lives tangibly of our people on a regular basis, while white businesses who despise us can definitively say that they are patronized by black customers every single day, multiple times per day. Black businesses most often cannot definitively say that they are patronized by our people every single day. You look on Facebook, on your Facebook feed, where there are businesses, specifically those who are culturally based, improving the lives of our people. And you can have a black, you know, business where they're just selling some products by the whites and their offspring, just selling alcohol or something, or getting into the marijuana business or something like that, or they're promoting some white business or some white multi-level marketing scheme or something like that that's empowering white businesses. Some of those people are patronized on a regular basis and so forth. But if you deal with black businesses culturally based that are improving the lives of our people tangibly on a regular basis, ask them, any one of them, are they patronized every single day by the community, multiple times per day by the community? Most will say no. Very often you can go 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4, 5, 7 days with absolutely no business at all. So we can't definitively say that. We're chronically undersupported, and ask any black business, especially cultural based, about that. Can't definitively say that they're patronized by our people every single day or multiple times per day. This is born of a conditioning wherein we PBBW, praise black and buy white. What many non-business owners are unaware of, and this is something that we business owners speak about amongst one another, but sometimes people don't know the inside story. But if you're not a business owner, you're not an entrepreneur, if you're not engaged in that process where every single thing that you're doing, your outcome, your income is dependent on what's in your mind, what you're dealing with innovatively, creatively, and so forth, your focus on business. If you're not producing, then you're not receiving any income. If you're not producing what the community needs and getting it out to the community, then there's no income. You're not guaranteed a check every 2 weeks. So most people who are not engaged in that process where their livelihood is absolutely dependent on them being productive and so forth, you may not know the inside, you know, background, you know, machinations of what's going on. So what many non-business owners are unaware of is that Black business owners receive messages, especially culturally based businesses, receive messages on a daily basis wherein the sender will state, "I just want you to know, brother, that I appreciate everything you're doing. I will be purchasing your product soon. I want you to know, sister, that I love your work and you're so great." And they just praise. "And I just want you to let you know that I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be buying your products. I'm going to be buying your books. I'm going to be buying your, you know, supporting your institution," and so forth. We get that on a daily basis, on a regular basis. People tell us, "Well, I've been following your work for years. I've downloaded all your books, or I've purchased your hair care products from a sister or the shea butter, or I've seen it and I've been talking about it. I've been telling people about it. I've been following what you've been doing for years. You're doing so much great work. I just want to let you know that I'm going to be buying your stuff soon." We get those messages on a regular basis. Now, in our experience, we've confirmed this with various business owners over the years, but in our experience, and it's been confirmed with others over the years, approximately about 10% of those individuals follow through, and we appreciate the fact that they do follow through because they say, "I just want to let you know I'm going to be purchasing your stuff," and then they actually follow through and do that. The remaining 90% never do that, and that's about an average over the years. And when we communicate with other business owners, they will say exactly the same thing. About 10% or so who say that they go ahead and do it, about 90% or so never do. And that happens for year after year after year after year. You're constantly receiving messages, emails, you know, posts, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, regular emails and so forth, people praising. "Brother, I just wanted to let you know I'm going to support." And then we're used to, we know about 10% are not going to do it, and about 10% will do it. About 90% of those messages, if we were to list or show a printout of all of the messages of people who say that, you would be astonished. And most Black business owners, we talk about that amongst ourselves, but people outside of the, you know, entrepreneurship, you know, realm don't know anything about that, because very often people will say that, they think they're just saying that to the person. It's just them saying that. They don't realize that after they send that message, somebody else is sending that, we'll get like 30 or 40 of those in the course of a month. So we say about 90% don't do that. At the same time, however, we never walk into Walmart, 7-Eleven, or any white business and tell them, "Hey, I just wanted to stop by and let you know that I really appreciate you, Walmart, what you're doing, and I'm going to be buying something from you real soon. I just stopped in the store to let you know that." We don't go up to cashiers, walk into white businesses and say, "Hey, I just want to let you know next week I'm going to buy something from you," and then leave. We don't do that. We simply buy from them on a regular basis. Even when they treat us negatively, even when they despise us, they give us the nigger treatment, we're in there on a regular basis. If they give us the nigger treatment, then we'll go and talk to a manager and try to make them treat us right. But we're constantly supporting them on a regular basis. We don't promise to support them, we just support them. But when it comes to the culturally based businesses, we want to say, "Hey, brother, I'm going to support you," and then that typically does not take place. Now, that's a conditioning, and it's very important to understand why it's a conditioning, because it's chronic, and you see these various Black businesses out in the community, under-supported, white businesses are very supported, but we're doing the PBBW, praising Black and buying white. Because it's a conditioning, we have to confront it as a conditioning and then overcome the condition. If we think we're just, you know, doing something positive by telling a Black business owner, "Hey, brother, I just want to let you know, next week I'm buying everything that you have." If we say that and then a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, that doesn't happen, and you have literally hundreds of people tell a Black business that, and when you take time to communicate and read messages or, you know, field calls on the phone, and people have those kinds of statements, and you count up all the time, you may have spent hours communicating with people literally 20, 30, 40 hours communicating with people, and at the end of the day, that hasn't happened. So, and black business owners typically talk about that kind of thing amongst themselves. But we have a remedy for that condition, and it is in our OCOM economic development model. This is why this model is key, because it's dealing with economic development rooted in our ancestral religious values. Everybody else practices economics based on their values, even though they have fake religions, but they have a system, the way they're going to communicate, how they operate, what they value, what they want to do, who they're going to serve, and so forth. We're the only ones trying to use white pseudo-religion, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hebrewism, Moorishism, all of this nonsense, or just white culture in general, and trying to sell products or have economic development based on a white model because we think culture is not important. But if it wasn't important, then white people wouldn't be trying to brainwash us with their culture or their way of life so that we're constantly supporting them. The evidence that culture is key is that we're constantly supporting them while we're praising black and buying white. That's the proof that they have indoctrinated us with their culture because we're constantly supporting them. 95%+ of the money we spend is outside of our community. Less than 5% of over $1 trillion we have is spent in our community because we've been enculturated by them. While they're secretly, you know, covertly teaching us that culture is not important, and what they're saying is our culture shouldn't be embraced, only theirs should be, so that we can continue to be their slaves. So the remedy is in the OCOM economic development model, and the operational focus within that model, once the philosophical foundation is established, is the starve the beast and feed the pride operation. This means we make an assessment on a weekly basis regarding what funds we could have potentially wasted with a white business, and then we starve the beast and feed the pride. We reallocate those funds away from the white business and direct them to the black business organization or institution of the week. This is how we deliberately and definitively break the PBBW, or the praising black and buying white conditioning. If we do not deliberately and forthrightly acknowledge and confront this conditioning, it will continue to govern our behavior. And what is evidence for that? So, as we mentioned in the past, just statistically, there are nearly about 1.9 million black businesses, nearly 2 million black businesses in America. There are about 2 million unemployed black people in America. If each business hired one person full-time, unemployment would be solved overnight. That's obvious math. We could easily shift at least 10% of the $20 billion we spend on a weekly basis. 10% of $20 billion is $2 billion. We could easily shift. We spend $20 billion with white businesses weekly. We can shift at least 10% of that $2 billion away from white businesses and direct it to black businesses. Instead of going to a white-owned gas station, we can go to a black-owned gas station. Instead of going to a white-owned convenience store, we could find a black-owned convenience store. Instead of going to a white-owned vegan restaurant, we could find a black-owned vegan restaurant. Instead of going to, you know, a store like CVS to get soap and something we need every single day, soap, toothpaste, shea butter, hair care products, and so forth, instead of going into large stores and just purchasing that, we can get those things that we must use every single day directly from a black business. If we shift just 10% of the $20 billion we spend weekly, taking $2 billion of that and just shift it away from the white businesses to black businesses, each one of those businesses could hire one person, or one business maybe hire 20 and one, two, and so forth, but we could literally solve the unemployment problem instantaneously, overnight, and permanently, ensuring every black person currently unemployed could find work with a black business immediately and permanently, and it is merely a choice. We think certain things are so hard, and we have to come up with all kinds of schemes about what does the black community need to do. It's very simple, making a choice. You're either going to weekly finance our oppressor, or are you going to weekly finance your own people? That's just a simple choice. Every time you reach in your pocket to spend money, are you going to spend it with a black business if you can or not? If you do not, then that culture that you're practicing, that way of life that you're practicing is, I'm going to support the slave master and deny our own people. That is a culture that's been indoctrinated within us. Black people start talking about embracing black culture, meaning embrace a way of life that's sustaining for us and empowering for us. Ignorant fools say, well, culture is not important. We need to deal with finance. Culture simply means way of life, or amambre, the omine, the nation, and bere, the way or manner. Amambre is the way of the nation, the way of the people. That is the term for culture in Akan language and so forth, the way of the people. If you're brainwashed into believing that culture is not important, that's a sleight of hand by the white scenario spring just to keep you indoctrinated. So you're always practicing a culture because you're always engaged in operating in a certain way. As long as you're living and breathing and moving and acting, you're doing something in a certain way that somebody else is doing in a different way. You're doing it in a certain way. But what way are you living? How are you thinking? How are you making decisions? If we're constantly supporting our enemies, then we're embracing their culture, which is the enslavement of our minds. We need to get back to our culture. Culture is key. Amambre is key. So whenever you hear people saying culture is not important, that means they are indoctrinated, they are ignorant, these are fools. And they're repeating the misinformation and the scheme of the whites and their offspring. So when we simply return to our culture, meaning our way of life, we instantaneously, instinctively are repulsed when we have to give money to the whites and their offspring. We look forward to giving money to black businesses, organizations, and institutions so they can be employed, so they can employ other black people in the community, so they can serve us at a greater capacity, so we can exchange with one another and expand and grow. We're instinctively drawn to doing that, and we hate having to give money to the whites and their offspring. It's repulsive by nature. It's a religious conviction to support our businesses as opposed to something ideological or intellectual. If you're enslaved by the culture of the whites and their offspring, you're constantly supporting them on a regular basis, if someone comes along intellectually and says, hey, we should support black business, then you say, yeah, we need to support black business. That's the way we need to do it, and you start praising black. But if you're enslaved with white culture internally, you're going to talk about black businesses, but you're going to constantly support white businesses. You're going to praise black and buy white. But if you return to your own culture, your own way of life, realign your spirit with your krawa, your soul, then what you're doing is re-engaging a way of life that is harmonious based on the nature of who you are. So you have a natural inclination to support your own people and a natural disinclination from the whites and their offspring. So you're naturally aligned. You have that natural propensity to embrace anything that is supportive of us. So you don't praise black and buy white. You praise black and you buy black. And you denigrate white and you reject white to the extent that you can. Yet there are certain things that we are not offering. We're not building, manufacturing cars at this point in North America and so forth. So we're purchasing from other individuals. But there are many things that we use every single day that we can be supportive. And then there are other things that we waste money on. Of course, we talk about Black Panther and the $250 million our people wasted on a movie that was promoting this sexuality and interracialism and white savior complex and integration and so forth. And the sequel will bear that out even further and so forth with the dissexual, you know, line and scheme dealing with the females and so forth. We wasted $250 million in 5 weeks on that nonsense. $250 million could have easily employed so many of our people. But that's that way of life. People would talk about, oh, you shouldn't denigrate that nonsensical movie. You should support that. And we can do both things at the same time. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can support black businesses and also support our enemies and their foolish story and their indoctrination and so forth. But what ended up happening? All the people who were angry when people attacked the foolishness of Black Panther and talked about you shouldn't be speaking against it, those are the same people who continue to support white businesses to the neglect of black businesses because they're still enculturated by the whites in their offspring. They praise black, but buy white. But when you engage ancestral religion, you have a religious conviction. You're religiously convicted, naturally inclined towards supporting our own. So this is what we're dealing with. This is why we put this forward. It's Akuada, or Wednesday, the day of Nana Akua. She is the one that gave us the idea of this whole notion of addressing this issue and the remedy for PBBW, praising black and buying white, and putting a highlight on the fact that that is a conditioning. And if you don't recognize that you even have a conditioning, then you're not going to address it. If you don't deliberately and forthrightly acknowledge it and then seek to and move to overcome it, then by default, you remain in the enculturated state, the indoctrinated state that you are already in. So she put that information forward when we were at the shrine earlier, wanted us to show the relationship. Many people don't know much about Nebethet. They just know she's the sister of Alset, the sister of Alsar and so forth. They don't know her role. They know she wears the vessel on her head, but they don't know that vessel is the same two vessels in the body, the kidneys, which the renal system, the fluid balancing system, the electrolyte, mineral balancing system in the body. And when you have that mineral balancing, that has to do with fertility, that has to do with abundance, that has to do with produce, that has to do with offerings and so forth. And she's the divine courieress. Without her, we wouldn't be able to balance ourselves. We wouldn't be able to excrete poisons, toxins, and so forth from the system through that excretory function of the renal system. We wouldn't be able to balance our minerals in the body, and then that leads spiritually and emotionally to the balancing of the emotions and being affected by other people's emotional projections. When you can filter all of that out, just like the kidneys filter out the toxins and excrete them from the body, when you are in alignment with the Nebethet, that vessel on the head is balanced. You're not being flooded with other people's thoughts, you know, projections, perversities and so forth, and then the head becomes heavy and you become imbalanced and you're being pulled back and forth by other people's emotional projections. When you can filter that out and remain balanced, that electrolyte balance, fluid balance within the body is the same electrolyte balance and fluid balance within the spirit body and so forth, because you're in alignment with Nebethet, then you can make proper decisions and not be pulled back and forth. So all of that is related to her function in creation. Most people don't know what her function is because the whites and offspring can't put forward a living tradition. They don't know who she is in our traditional cultures, and many of our people don't know who she is. They didn't know that she was Agberu, the wife of Eshu in the Yoruba tradition, called the Load Bearer, until we put that information out. They didn't know that she was Akua in the Akan tradition, whose title is Kukua, an earthen vessel, the courieress, until we put that information out. They didn't know she was Koni Koni, the wife of Legba and Vodun, until we put that information forward. And they didn't know that she governed the renal system and so forth and all that entails and the ramifications of that until we put this information forth. And once people saw it and began to incorporate it and study it, they were able to verify that and so forth. And you can verify it through ritual communication with Nebethet, with Akua, Agberu, Koni Koni, and so forth. So she wanted us to put that forward because it's Eguada Marketplace Day, which is, of course, Akuada Wednesday, her day, and she governs that energy. So we're coming up, and this has to do with fertility as well and empowerment and so forth. We mentioned this weekend we're having our Kaet Soul of Hoodoo and Voodoo retreat in New Orleans. Myself and Voodoo Queen Kalinda Laveau will be conducting that retreat this weekend in New Orleans. As we said earlier, we do have a couple of spaces open if you still would like to register for that. We had a couple of cancellations, so we have a couple of spaces open. Just go to the Kakai page on the website. You'll see that. We also recently posted our Shayet, the culture of Obia in Hoodoo. That retreat will be November 30th through December 3rd in Jamaica. In Portland, Jamaica, so we have a page for that. We're only registering about 25 people, a smaller group, because this is a training, cultural, and ritual retreat. It's not just a vacation, but it's, of course, people will vacation, but it's a training, cultural, and ritual retreat. We're having workshops going through Obaasan Afrikaani Manhood, Oberima Obaasan Afrikaani Womanhood, Oberima Afrikaani Manhood, Patasa Satem Mate Masie, these different things. So then when people come out of the training, they will be empowered to take this information to the community and have similar related trainings for Oberima Afrikaani Manhood and Obaasan Afrikaani Womanhood in their communities, in their families, and so forth. When we're building Afrikaani manhood and Afrikaani womanhood rooted in our ancestral religious values, then we build strong people. That's the foundation for strong relationships, marriages. That's the foundation for strong children. That is the foundation for strong families. That is the foundation for Amai Ancestry nation building and, you know, the goal of Amaniye nationism and so forth. Nation building rooted in our ancestral religious values. So we have to start with proper notions of manhood and womanhood rooted in our ancestral religious values. So we have those retreats coming up. But at the same time, we also have, which many of you know about, we're in the final push finally after over a year going through this process. We're in the final phase of filming for our documentary film. And we're moving to complete the filming process over the next few days. We're going to, of course, be filming in Louisiana because Kalinda is one of the people in the film, so we'll be filming her segment this weekend. But we're also going to be going through Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. We've already been in Florida and other places to film. We have to go to these different places because these are the different seats of hoodoo and juju and vodun and wanga and nganga and these ancestral religious traditions we have maintained in our blood circles here in North America for the past 300 years. We are showcasing the divination systems that we have maintained in our blood circles for hundreds of years here in the Western Hemisphere since we were forced into the Western Hemisphere during the Musuo Kesie, the Great Perversity, the enslavement era. But we maintain these ancestral religious practices and these forms of divination that we still use. They are what empowered us and guided us to wage war effectively against the whites and their offspring and force the end of enslavement in the Western Hemisphere. We need to bring that information out. So this is what the film is about. So the goal is to wrap up all of the filming in these different states over the next few days through the weekend and into the early part of next week. So part of this process is we've had a crowdfunding effort and we are asking people today, starve the beast and feed the pride. We're at the final piece of that. So we've reached 71% of our crowdfunding effort. We've been doing this since last year in January. So we're in the 70th week of the crowdfunding effort now. We've reached 71%. This is why we have been able to purchase equipment and travel to different states and so forth to start the filming process, but we want to complete that process and then move into post-production so that the goal is to finish the filming by the end of May, but then we have the next month is all nothing but post-production. We're going to spend that entire month dealing with the post-production process, the editing process, so by the end of June, we can actually finally release this documentary and begin having screenings all over the country. And, of course, we will be going outside of the country as well, but first all over the country, showcasing this information to our people, returning our people to our ancestral religious practices that were inherited. We're not dependent on anyone outside of our direct ancestral blood circles for our ancestral religious practice. So we're asking today, we're moving towards that process. We'll be leaving tomorrow night and into Friday to go to the retreat to New Orleans, and that's where we're going to start that final push for the filming. So we're asking people to support today so we can complete this process. We had scheduled to film in Georgia and Alabama and so forth last week, but we had to reschedule, so we lost some days, but we want to incorporate that over the next few days to wrap up all the filming. So we need some assistance to get from that 71% of the crowdfunding effort to the 100%. We got the 71% with 135 people, and yet I say we thank everyone who has contributed. So over 70 weeks, we've had about 135 people contribute. So that is about two people per week on average. Of course, sometimes it's more than, you know, two people, and sometimes it was no people. So, but on average, about two people per week over the past 70 weeks. But we do have, on a monthly basis, on average, about 4,500 downloads of our free books. We have 30 books out. We made the ebook versions free. So even if people can't purchase the soft cover versions that range between $8 and $11, they can still access the free ebook versions, which is the entire version, because this information shouldn't be held ransom. So we're getting about 4,500 downloads of our books per month, 55,000 over the past 12 months. So that is, on average, more than 1,000 book downloads per week. But at the same time, this is where we get the PBBW piece. We're having thousands of books downloaded on a monthly basis. We receive messages from people on a regular basis where they say, brother, your work has changed my life. I stopped smoking. I stopped drinking. I stopped smoking marijuana. I have a better relationship with my spouse, my significant other. We're going to be married, or my children, and we've changed our diets. We're healthier and so forth. We got back involved in ancestral religion, took the perm out of our hair. We're no longer wasting money on self-destructive things. We're doing all kinds of things. We have people tell us that on a regular basis, tell us they've downloaded all 30 books and so forth. And it's all good because it is empowering people. But if we're getting 1,000 book downloads per month over the course, or per week, over 1,000 book loads per week, 55,000 book downloads over the course of a year, but we're getting about two people per week over the past year to support the film. Everybody loves the concept of the film, and they can't wait for it to come out, but we do need some support for the people who really understand and really value the work that we're doing, because we really want to complete it by the end of this Memorial Day weekend and into May 29th and 30th. We want to have completed all of that filming, and we can do that even though we missed last week, but we can do it if we have the support of the community, so we can complete that travel schedule, New Orleans as well as the other states. So if you support the work, take time now, if you can, to go directly to the fundraiser page, fundrazr.com/AmaduKafo_Adebisa. Any contributions welcome, because that supports us and moves us in the right direction and so forth. So please support that effort. After supporting, please share. We if you look on Facebook, you'll see, for example, they sent us a notification, a benchmark. It said your posts have been liked 20,000 times. So imagine the various likes. It's very similar to people going and coming to a black business saying, brother, I just want to let you know I'm going to be supporting your business. But then when they go to Walmart, they just walk in and purchase. There are a lot of likes, but we need the support. We have to break that conditioning, that PBBW praising black and buying white. We have to break that conditioning. If we don't, we would simply continue to fund our oppression on a regular basis. So if there are any questions on the phone line, you can hit the number 1. This was just a shorter broadcast. Initially, we weren't planning to broadcast tonight because we are still getting some things together for the retreat. But tonight is Akuada, and Nana Akua Nebehet literally directed us to put that article out, which we weren't even thinking about until this morning and into the afternoon when she directed us to do so. So we went ahead and wrote that, and then she directed us to make it a WordPress article, and then we were just going to leave it as a WordPress article, and that was it. But then just about three hours ago, she pushed us to say, no, we need to go into detail about the article to really explain what the nature of that conditioning is and why the article was published and so forth. So we went ahead just a few hours ago and put out the notification saying that we were going to have a broadcast. At first, you notice when we first put it out, we just put it out as the article itself. But then a few hours later, we changed it and said this is going to actually be a broadcast, because we weren't planning to put that out. So this is a short broadcast. That's why we started a little bit earlier, an hour earlier than normal. We're going to end the broadcast here. If you have any questions, of course, you can send us an email on Facebook or, you know, the regular email and so forth. But for those who have not yet had a chance over the past 70 weeks to support our film effort, Starve the Beast and Feed the Pride, and we appreciate it. Any support right now before people forget and log off, any support right now, we appreciate. We say yerase, we thank you for the support, because we can't wait to finish the filming and get this film out to our people here in this country and around the world. So we're going to end the broadcast here. Yerase, we thank you for tuning into this broadcast, the special broadcast of Eguada Marketplace Day. And Yebeshi Abio, we will meet again. What's up?